Black are gold pants, 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 black.
Black Heart Gold Podcast, episode 58. Not exactly a landmark episode, but it is for other reasons. Pat Vint, Adam Jacoby, here at the Blackheart Gold Pants Studios. Adam, what's going on?
Not a whole lot, man. What's your libation of choice tonight?
Can I give a no comment?
No. Okay, no, well, you can't.
Well, here's the situation. I got back from Lollapalooza 2 hours ago, and I haven't had a chance to go to the store, let alone like even consider, you know, what kind of beer I wanted to drink before I got on this thing. So all I have left are the MGD 64 lemonades that my girlfriend and one bottle of Grain Belt.
Okay. So
I will have the one Grain Belt, and then the MGD 64 lemonades will come out after that, and I'm sure I'll be, you know, three sheets to the wind. But hey, I'm going to the Great Taste this weekend in Madison, so I'll get my good beer in, then I can drink.
Well, fuck you.
Lemonade beer here for a little while. What are you drinking? It can't be as good as mine.
No, it can't. I opened a Sam Adams Light. Pretty darn good beer. Pretty darn good light beer. And I also like poured myself a cocktail like half an hour ago. Like I was like, all right, I'm going to have backup if I like, cause I took care of all this at like, 8 o'clock, and I was like, all right, I'll have backup, but I've just forgotten to drink any of it. So now I'm like double fisting, but they're both still full.
You're no fisting.
Right. Exactly.
Wait, that sounds really inappropriate. London calling. All right. Anyway, let's talk football. It's August. Thank God. We're right around the corner. What do we got? 20 days? 23 days?
Yeah, basically. Three more Saturdays, and then after that, it's football season.
Excellent. And we are joined by our good friend Mike Felder from In the Bleachers and various other places throughout the media empire that is Felderville. Mike, what's going on?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys so much for having me on.
You want to get all your plugs in right away?
Onsidekick.com. Got some new stuff going up there this week. And crystalballrun.com, I believe, is the address. New stuff up there actually tomorrow. A preview of my favorite player for the year, which is, I'll spoil it right now, Steven Garcia.
Nice.
And obviously in thebleachers.net, and of course always on the Twitter machine. Always.
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 And you left one out.
Who did I leave out?
The devilwearsprada.com.
Oh, actually, it's a good movie, okay? That is a good movie.
We were just discussing off air the fact that Mike was watching Devil Wears Prada tonight. We won't hold that against him. Mike, you've got a very keen insight into the most recent NCAA college football scandal debacle, the one at North Carolina. For our listeners who aren't paying that much attention, give us kind of a quick thumbnail of what exactly has happened in the last 2 weeks in Chapel Hill.
Well, it started 13 months ago, and as everybody's known, I don't know how much or how little folks have followed along, but 9 major violations. The notice of allegations came out about 2 months ago, in June, I believe. And as that happened, Butch Davis was still the coach, still drawing support from the fans, banking money to pay for the Blue Zone, which is a new part of the end zone that they've put in, basically bowled in the stadium with a new academic center and a new, all sports weight room facility. The first down payment essentially for that was made. And going forward, Butch Davis was the guy. Media Day, Butch Davis was our guy. They were supporting him. And then after Media Day, after he'd done his media tour and did a lot of the local radio stuff for the folks that were there, Kind of got a bombshell dropped on us two Wednesdays ago. Butch Davis got fired. He walked into a board of trustees meeting and walked in with a job and walked out without one, and kind of really just sent a, it was, they kept it under wraps very well in terms of this was going to happen. And we're thinking, oh, this is the annual board of trustees meeting. No big deal. He goes in, they take care of things, and then he walks out. We get on with the season a week away from training camp. Wasn't the case. He ends up losing his job and kind of sent things into a tailspin. It's become a really ugly situation locally. With the change on our board of trustees, Holden Thorpe, the chancellor, got the power he needed, the backing he needed to push Davis out. And when those stars aligned, he made his move. And it was the worst timing possible. And I think every football fan can agree with that. Losing your coach a week before training camp is never a good thing. Mm-hmm. And so what you're dealing with now is we've got an interim coach in Everett Withers. You've got a faction of folks that are so upset by all this that they are actually seeking legal action against Holden Thorpe under the pretense that he kind of misled them when they were seeking donations for the Blue Zone. And it's less about the money for them. It's less about the money and a lot more about bringing up, did Holden Thorpe conspire against us for that entire 13 months? Or was this really a spur-of-the-moment change, the way that he tried to frame it in the awful press conference that he had? That it honestly, it was laughable. It was very embarrassing, to be honest. And there's just really no direction right now from the top at UNC. And things really have all kind of just gone down the drain. Nobody knows what's going on. Got to find a new AD. The athletic director, Dick Bedore, chose to step down. He was going to retire at the end of the year anyways. Now he said, listen, find a new AD to hire this coach because I don't want to be a part of that. So it's just there's a lot of moving parts in this, and a lot of them stink. So not a good situation for the kids, a tough situation for that coaching staff, and just not a good situation overall down at for me up, but for you guys down in Chapel Hill.
What's the general mood like in the locker room? Like, are they generally pro Everett Withers kinds of guys, or are they still really pissed off about how this all went down, or, you know, both, or what's the situation like?
It's eerily similar to a year ago at this time, being upset, but also being like, look, we got to put our best foot forward. Everett Withers is a guy that everybody likes. He's a good guy. He, by all accounts, I mean, I've got good friends that played in that secondary there, and they love him. He's a great guy. He's been waiting a long time to get this chance, and I think he'll make the most of it. But at the same time, they came to that school to play for Butch Davis. All those kids that are there now came to play for Coach Davis. So it does hurt. But ultimately for them, they've got that feeling of the rug got pulled out from us again. Kind of a deja vu all over again thing where last year we were geared up to have a great season, and then the rug got pulled out from underneath us. And then right when we thought we were getting our footing, we had this academic probe, and the rug got yanked out all over again. And now, a year later, they're going into their season, and another salvo gets launched at them, and they've got to pick up the pieces and put that best foot forward. They're in the best spirits you can be when you lose your head coach. They're going after it. I mean, they're working hard. We've had three relatively significant transfers. Brandon Willis, the kid who committed to Tennessee, enrolled at North Carolina, transferred to UCLA, transferred back to North Carolina, is now transferring again, which is going to be 2 years of no football for him. Maiwan Jackson, another kid who was expected to have a pretty significant role playing defensive back, has some family issues. He's going back home. And Hunter Furr, he was buried on the depth chart at the running back position. Good kid, had a heck of a game against Florida State, but he's decided to go to seek a career elsewhere where he's going to get the playing time that he really honestly probably deserves, just could never break onto the depth chart when he's got some guys, Giovanni Bernard and Ryan Houston, that are squarely standing in his path to getting that significant playing time that he's looking for.
Pat, you mentioned that this is the second year in a row that you've had issues. Now, the academic things obviously came from up upon high, but is this a situation where the Board of Trustees and the Chancellor are just clueless to the football calendar and clueless to what effect this might possibly have on the season on fundraising, or is it they just really don't care?
I think it's a little bit of both, to be honest with you, Patrick. I look at it and I think, on one hand, not only do they not, I don't think they get it. I think, and I've said this from the beginning, it's sort of just a clown shoes approach. It's a joke, a lot of it. They don't understand how to deal with things, and whether it was the NCAA, which kind of screwed things at the start with their handling, to now this, the way they've mishandled this, this whole event, it just speaks to how ultimately they operate in a vacuum. They didn't expect the backlash that they're getting, and the biggest evidence I have of that is Holden Thorpe. They released emails to the News and Observer, the newspaper here, and the emails were painted up to make it look like he was getting equal amounts of support and equal amounts of detractors, and that wasn't the case by any means. But they thought that they, oh, well, we can spin it so it looks like it's not that bad so that everybody will get on board. And I don't think they were expecting this big of an outcry. And to be honest, as a former player, as a guy that this is the program that's near and dear to my heart, there's a piece of me in that, in Keenan Stadium. It's nice to see folks come out and support the program this way. It's not great for the university, but at the same time, there is a, hey man, you know what? They do actually care about football here.
Did you play for Butch?
I did not play for Butch. My last year was right before he got there.
Oh, okay.
I've got friends that play for Butch. The last guys that I was on the team with just graduated. I got a good friend that plays, that's playing for the Packers now, and TJ Yates is down with the Texans, guys like that. But they were grandfathered in that last class from Coach Bunning that came in to play for Bunning that ended up staying over with Butch Davis is all gone now. These are all Butch guys playing, and it's, I mean, they're a different breed of players. They're damn good football players. They're good kids, and it's tough to see them kind of get tossed under the bus right now.
How do you think this lawsuit's going to end?
I think that they're looking to file a Freedom of Information Act request to get Holden Thorpe's emails and his phone calls and all those things to find out who he was talking to. Was he conspiring? Was he working with Art Chansky, who's a pretty prominent member of the media here, that sent a letter out saying, listen, fire Butch Davis now. It was months ago. He said, fire Butch Davis now. I can get you lined up with a good friend of mine, Jim Delaney. I can get you lined up with a good friend of mine, Eddie Fogler. We can get a coaching search going. Let's do this all underneath the table so we can get him out, get somebody else in place, and smooth things over. So if folks want to know if he's dealing with Art Chansky, is he dealing with Jim Delaney? Is he working with somebody else behind the scenes to orchestrate this move, including the new members of the Board of Trustees? So I think this is, like I said, it's more about pulling information out to embarrass Holden Thorpe, to possibly get him out, than it is about the money. I don't know if it's going to get to go to court. I'm talking to some lawyer friends that I have. They don't think it's going to go to court. But I think ultimately the goal is if we can get this information out, if we can get the news to put in these Freedom of Information Act requests as well, they can get some backing to where things get exposed. And at that point, UNC is going to have to make a choice. How much, what are they willing to do to appease these people? Because they're all big money donors of people involved in this suit.
Well, now that you've got donors filing Freedom of Information Act requests, I guess the next question is, when are you getting your invitation to join the Southeast Conference? I know they're looking to expand. You're right there.
Listen, I'm not going to lie. As a football guy, the thing that swayed me to being a full-time football guy was being in high school and going to take visits and checking out Tennessee and South Carolina and Georgia and looking at places like that and being – and Clemson as well, being awed at what it was like to have 80,000 plus, you know, 100,000 in Neyland, sitting in a stadium all roaring. I would never turn down the SEC. I'll be honest saying that. So if they came calling, I would love to hear us listen. But that'll never happen with the North Carolina legislature and with the way UNC is tied to the ACC. But listen, I would absolutely listen to it.
If you wanted to go somewhere where there was 100,000 people not saying a word, you could have gone to Michigan.
Oh.
Zing.
Oh, and with that, let's talk, let's get a little bit broader here. We'll take you off of the hot seat to your alma mater. Your preseason top 10, who do you see, first off, who do you have in your top spot?
I've got Bama. This Alabama team to me, they look a lot like that 2009 team. Quarterback situation where you've got a guy that didn't play a lot coming in, but you've got the running back there. You've got the offensive line there. You've got the defense that's all coming back. And the only thing you're missing here is Julio Jones. And Marquise Mays is a different type of receiver, but he's pretty damn good too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What I like about Alabama is their tough road games are at Florida. Mm-hmm. That's all.
Yeah, that's fine by me. I mean, I agree with you as far as the look of that team seems to be incredibly similar 2 years ago. And, you know, hell, last year they were a pretty damn good football team, too. And I will never discount Nick Saban unless it's 15 seconds left and rotates and there's a shotgun. Otherwise, he's going to be the ace in the hole for them in pretty much any circumstance. So I'm assuming you then have Bama winning the SEC. Who do you have in the rest of your top five?
I go with Oklahoma. I put mm-hmm. LSU at the three spot. I know a lot of folks like Oregon there. I like Oregon at four. And Boise State rounds out the fifth. I couldn't find a way to move them down more. I tried, but I just couldn't do it. I locked them in at five.
Do you think Boise's going to go undefeated?
No, I don't. And I don't know if it's going to be Georgia. I don't know if it's going to be TCU. I don't know who it is. I don't think they're going to go undefeated, but I think that right now coming into the season, they're my fifth team. I think with what they have coming back, with how well focused they are in terms of harnessing what they can do for one game when they play somebody big, they can play with anybody for that one game. It's not to say that they can play with everybody week after week after week, but for one game, those guys can get up and they can play a spectacular game. I mean, they've got just as good a chance of losing to Georgia as they do of beating Georgia by two or three scores. So I think they're a quality football team. They're well coached, which I think speaks volumes to Chris Peterson and the staff he's got there. Mm-hmm. So I definitely that's a football team that they're dangerous, and you don't want to play them in a bowl game. We'll put it that way.
Right. I just don't know who Kellen Moore is going to throw to is the thing.
Yeah. I don't know either. And Kellen Moore is, and I hate to use the word overrated, but he's so overappreciated, I think is one of the that might be the best way to say it. He's a good football player, he is, and I think saying overrated takes away from how good of a football player he is, but I think people are looking at the numbers, they look at the scores, and they don't look at everything. I think he's a pretty good quarterback, but I don't think that he's the world beater that a guy like an Andrew Luck is, that a guy like an EJ Manuel can be. I don't think he's in that caliber in terms of an athlete or of a quarterback. I think he's a good quarterback that finds holes and he makes throws. And then he throws a lot of moon balls, the guys that are wide open. And I think that part gets passed away as just being mm-hmm. a great play when ultimately, you know, I'd like to see footballs thrown on frozen ropes, you know, across the middle.
Yeah, I'd like to see it when he's not facing, well, now it's going to be Mountain West secondaries, but like he was throwing against the fucking whack all the time. Yeah, of course you're going to get, Pettis open by 20 yards on a fly route if he's going against some, you know, jack off cornerback from Utah State. Like, come on. But yeah, no, you're right. He's not awesome against, you know, really good secondaries, but, you know, he doesn't suck either. So, it'll be interesting to see how he does in the Mountain West and, you know, against, a team like TCU. It really sucks that they're only going to be in the same conference as TCU for 1 year.
Yeah, and I think what they did to TCU was an absolute thief job, the way they stole that home game from them.
Yeah.
That was low. It was petty. But, you know, on the flip side, Boise State's got the uniform ban, which, hey.
Yeah. Okay, I read your piece on the uniform ban, and I get a certain sense that you might be as annoyed with Boise State as we are.
Yeah, it's not even Boise State. They're a heck of a ball club, and those football players, they get out there and they play hard, and their coach is a great coach. He's one of the top minds in college football. But the idea, the way they point at you're scared of us and you're afraid, and they discount the idea of how much revenue you lose by playing a home and home with a team that seats 30,000 and the fact they can't sell out their own stadium on the regular and all those, like those things go into the pot, and the idea that they're scared of the blue turf, it just, to me, is just absolutely frustrating. I find it to be infuriating at times with the blind, just adulation that they draw and the just absolute ignorance that folks have to actual facts when they're making these arguments is just frustrating.
Well, there was a story last week that was getting it. I noticed it from the guy from Big East Coast Bias, who said that one of the writers from, I think it was Fresno, somebody in California, had mentioned in passing that the Mountain West wanted to go to 12, and Boise nixed it because they didn't want to play somebody twice in one season.
Oh, come on.
to get their BCS spot. They didn't want to have the double jeopardy of having to play somebody again in the championship game.
I mean, I'm not going to all come on that, Adam, because Texas just did the exact same thing.
Yeah, but... But everyone knows Texas is full of shit for it, too.
Just saying, like, the idea of making an easy BCS route, that's not crazy.
Right. No, that's true. And it would have been interesting if the Pac-16 had happened, just because, you know, one of their main impetuses was they're like, hey, you know, if we have two 18 or 8-team divisions – shouldn't the winner of each division get a BCS spot? Like, that was going to be their big hook for having 16 teams.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm sure that the guys in the Big East are going to get upset by this, but they would have had two Big Easts and probably would have had two better – they would have had two better conferences in the Big East with Texas, Oklahoma, you know, Oklahoma State sitting in that bottom division, Texas A&M sitting in that bottom – the South, right. And the Southern Cal and Oregon and – Washington, if they get on the come up, but those teams sitting to the north, Stanford right now, with those teams in the north, they would have had two conferences that would have been better than the Big East.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Now, Michael, I noticed in your top five, there were two SEC teams. There was a Pac-10 team. There was a Mountain West team. There was, I'm forgetting somebody here.
Oklahoma.
Oh, Oklahoma, a big
12,
whatever
that. 10-12.
I really can't make that joke because I've been a Big Ten fan forever, and we haven't had 10 teams since 1991. But there's no Big Ten team in there. So who do you have as your top Big Ten team?
Wisconsin at 9. I really like Russell Wilson a lot, and I think that Wisconsin's got the ability to tiptoe into a national championship game if they can navigate their schedule. Ohio State should probably be in this top 10, but I put a lot of weight on quarterbacks and coaches, how much they mean. I don't think you can say that a quarterback is so good or so great, like whether it's Colt McCoy or Tim Tebow, or you look at TCU and Andy Dalton. I don't think you can say a quarterback is, you know, so good or he does this much and then also have that same team without that quarterback get boosted up into the top. And I definitely don't think you can lose your field general and a guy like Jim Tressel, who's done the BCS thing time and time and time again, who's held those guys together, who's got them to where they are. I don't think you can lose a guy like that and still be the same football team. So I had to knock them for that. And that's just, it's not because I don't think they have the talent to do it, because they definitely have, they've got top six, top seven talent, Ohio State does. But I don't think you can lose a guy like that and then just rebound from it and be okay.
Excuse me. Do you think Wisconsin is, that was my cough of agreement, by the way. That's how I.
Yes, cough off.
do you think Wisconsin's going to be, hurt very much, or at least that they're not going to get as much out of Russell Wilson just because he didn't have a full off season with that team?
No, honestly, I don't. I think part of the beauty of Wisconsin through this last decade has been the simplicity. You know what they're going to do. I know what they're going to do. Everybody knows what they're going to do. When they line up with the tight end to the left side, the fullback offset to the left side, they're running over that left tackle. Everybody knows that. Their goal is for you to stop them, and nobody's been able to stop them on a consistent basis yet. So I think that they're not going to be – I don't think it's going to be a difficult transition for him. He played in a similar offense at North Carolina State. Terminology is going to be different, but he played in that same pro style, run the football first, offense at North Carolina State. The difference is he didn't have an offensive line. He didn't have the running backs that they have. So I think it's going to be not necessarily a seamless transition, but I think it's going to be something that he's capable of picking up. He's a smart kid. He understands. He puts in the work to be good. I mean, you don't play baseball in the offseason, skip a spring, and then come back and still put up the numbers and put up the consistency that he's put up without being able to fully grasp what you're looking for when you're watching tape or what you're looking for when you're diagnosing a play on the field. So I think he's going to be able to make that transition. And honestly, I think he's going to give some Big Ten teams hell because it's the same Wisconsin team that you're used to, but they've got an extra thing on there. And it's not because he's that different than Scott Tolzien from he can drop back and throw the football. He can hand the football off to Monty Ball. He's capable of doing all those things, no problem. If they asked him to just do those things, he'd be okay. But they're not. They're going to let him when it's, you know, third and seven and his first two reads are down and he's got a linebacker coming up his butt. He's going to make that little shimmy shake. He's going to get out of the way. He's going to extend the play. And Nick Toon's going to be open down the field somewhere. And if he's not, there's going to be 8-9 yards for him to pick up, and he's going to do that extra thing. I don't think it's going to be him taking something away from their offense. I think he's got the same skill set with a little bit of extra.
You know what? I do question one thing about him, and it's decision making, and there's only one reason why. Because the man committed to Chuck Amato. I refuse to believe that somebody who said, yes, Chuck Amato, I will play for you, knows what the hell he's doing.
Of all the coaches in the world, I'm listening to you, Chuck Amato.
He's a heck of a salesman. Now, he sold Philip Rivers. He sold Mario Williams.
True.
He's a heck of a salesman. He's greasing wheels. He's okay with when it comes to selling kids and getting them in the program, he's okay. When it comes to having his defense lined up in the right spots and those kids playing discipline, that's when you get a little bit of problems with the shop.
Who else is in your top 10?
Number 6, I've got Florida State. Number 7, I've got A&M. I've got South Carolina at number 8. We went over 9, Wisconsin. And number 10, I got Arkansas. I know it's SEC heavy, I know. And it's
no, that's fine. I
like South Carolina a lot. I'm glad Stephen Garcia, the bromance with Garcia that I have continues to grow as he got reinstated, you know, in the last week. Marcus Lattimore is a heck of a ball player. Alshon Jeffrey he's arguably the best receiver in the country. And their defense under Ellis Johnson, is always ready to play football. So I like South Carolina. With Arkansas, it's more trust in Bobby Petrino than anything else. He made Stephen LaFour's, you know, get a cup of coffee in the NFL. So what he could do with a guy like Tyler Wilson, who's a good quarterback, who's going to listen, who's been in the system for a little while, who's looked good in the system. I think we all remember that Auburn game he played last year, who's looked good at times in that system. I think Bobby Petrino is going to be able to get a lot out of that guy, and they've got a ton of weapons coming back. And unlike last year, they start this year with a running game, something they didn't have last year until halfway through the season.
Okay, let's talk about number 7 because, you know, Texas A&M has a lot of people back, and they're also in the top 10 of the AP. But they're Texas A&M. Like, I cannot bring myself to trust them. And, if I'm being squarely irrational, you can tell me that, but don't you think that bad things are about to happen, to their season?
I wouldn't be surprised at all. Is it you don't trust Texas A&M or you don't trust Mike Sherman? Because both of those.
Well, and here's the thing, like their defense was pretty good last year, but then they lost Von Miller and, there isn't a ton of really high level talent on that defense. Now, there's experience, and that matters a lot. But I'm not squealing with glee over, you know, Sean Porter or anything. So I don't know. I don't think that they're going to be able to survive a shootout with Oklahoma State or Oklahoma. Maybe against Texas Tech. It wouldn't surprise me if Texas beat them, you know, in their season finale. I mean, that's 4 losses right there, 3 or 4 probably. And we're going to put them at number 7? Like, I don't know. I'm being pessimistic on them. I know, but I'm not feeling them.
No, and I totally, I absolutely understand. I like Cyrus Gray and Christine Michael. I like those two guys working together. An accidental discovery in Cyrus Gray, basically, midway through the year last year. I like Tannehill. He makes smart decisions with the football, something that can't be said about the Johnson kid that played there before him. So,
Gerard.
he was Ja'Cory Harris of the Plains. I mean, he was out there throwing the football to everybody that wasn't wearing his uniform.
That's almost an insult to Ja'Cory Harris, which I didn't think was possible.
So I absolutely understand. All I know is I think this team, last year they seemed so close, and I think this year they're right on the nose. Obviously they lose Von Miller, and that's going to be a tremendous blow. But I think they've got a lot of the pieces in place to be pretty successful. And like I said, they've got to play Oklahoma, obviously. They've got to play Texas. They've got to play Oklahoma State. They're going to be in shootouts. Mm-hmm. And I think this offense is capable of winning a shootout with Tannehill leading the way.
By the way, I always thought that the Ja'Cory Harris of the Plains was Robert Marv, who's already here. I'm assuming from your prior comment that you think that we're going to see Wisconsin against Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship game.
No, it wouldn't be that.
That's impossible.
They're in the same division.
I don't know this stuff yet. It's East and West. Come on.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Wisconsin and who?
This is Nebraska, Michigan State. They've got so many questions, but Nebraska or Michigan State, they're
probably.
I don't know which one. I think Michigan State, to me, they've got pieces in the place that you want them in, quarterback, running back. They've got some guys coming back on defense that are very good. But honestly, I think that everybody, I keep hearing folks talk about Nebraska. Now they're getting into the Big Ten. It's going to be a new experience for them, but there's another side to that coin, and I think Nebraska coming into the Big Ten is going to be a new experience for Big Ten teams as well. They play hard football, and they're not like the rest of the Big 12 in terms of we'll just chuck it around, 35 times a game, and we'll see what happens. They still play sound defensive football. They still hit people in the mouth, and I think Jared Crick coming back is a big step in that direction of being a formidable defense in the Big Ten. I think with them out there, getting after the football, running to the football, they still bring a lot of speed to the table. And obviously it's going to be interesting to see how that plays. The Big Ten, obviously, you guys know about the stereotype about the speed. This will be one of those tests. How fast are they? How fast is Nebraska and how fast is the Big Ten? Because they're a fast football team, and Bo Pelini plays fast football. I mean, he's done some work in the SEC. He understands what it means to play, high up tempo in terms of getting to the football all the time. So I think there's two sides to that new experience coin. And while those teams are trying to feel out Nebraska, Nebraska will be filling those teams out. And I mean, they've got to beat some tough teams. Obviously they've got to play Iowa. That's going to be a good football game. I think
it's going to be a heroic game.
But them playing Michigan State, I think I could definitely see that being for that division. I don't know which one it is, but it could definitely be for that division, whichever one it is.
Where is that game? Do you know off the top of your head?
Michigan State?
Is it at Michigan State?
Michigan State, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's the reason why I got Michigan State winning that division is because they get Nebraska at home. And I think you're right. I think they have the better group of position players.
Wait, no, it's at Nebraska.
What?
That's what this says.
You're reading next year's schedule or last year's schedule.
This is a 2011 Phil Steele. Did Phil get this wrong?
No, he probably got it right. If it's between me and Phil Steele, it's probably Phil Steele is right.
Well, he did call Auburn Alabama at some point, so. Yeah. Anyway.
That was fun. Okay, well, after getting everything wrong about the Big Ten, I think I'll probably let you go.
Okay, Mike, before we let him go, okay. When I was talking with Mike earlier tonight and we were setting up the date for this, he told me we were lucky that we were scheduling it for tonight because Pretty Little Liars is on is on Tuesday.
Yes.
Now, I've seen you tweet about this before. I have no idea what it is. What the hell is Pretty Little Liars, and why do you like it?
Pretty Little Liars is a teen drama that comes on ABC Family, 8 o'clock on Can I finish?
Please. Please.
Go. It is about four girls, Hannah, Aria, Emily, and Spencer. They,
Please tell me it's Spencer Hall.
No, it's four girls now, okay? And their friend, Allison, she got killed. And they're trying to solve her mystery. There's a person, A. We don't know if it's a guy or a girl. A is tormenting them. A has led them to a cemetery and projected images of Allison onto the wall of the cemetery. She has ruined a fashion show that they were in by writing whore and slut on Allison's pictures that were projected onto the fashion show for the whole town of Rosewood.
This is
a show that I know everything about, and it is a good show.
That's on ABC Family?
Oh, yeah. There's also statutory rape in the show.
God!
Aria is dating. Aria dates her former high school English teacher. He now works at a college so they can date, except for the fact that she is not 18, so that whole thing is weird, although it never gets mentioned. There's a weird kid named Toby that I think he's weird and kind of creepy looking, but he's actually a nice guy. Kind of like he's like a young version of the scary old guy in Home Alone that had the shovel.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
okay.
That's what Toby's character is.
Maybe it's his grandson.
It could be. He does a lot of manual labor. He does.
This sounds crazier than Breaking Bad. And it's on ABC Family.
Yeah, they just had the girl Emily, who's a world-class swimmer. Apparently, A has been injecting her protein bars with HGH. She just tested positive for HGH.
Victor Conti makes a special guest appearance.
I'm telling you, this show is a good show.
Does she have a mustache?
No mustache. She's not taking steroids.
HGH. I didn't know what I've never taken HGH. How am I supposed to fucking know? You're actually almost selling me on this show, by the way. And
all
it sounds
saying,
like one of the worst things I've ever heard of.
It's a good show. It's got, it's a good show. Basically what happens is I watch so much football. I spend so much time on ESPN3 on the computer and rolling through the XOS digital network. That sometimes when I want to step away from football, I want to step all the way away from football, and nothing is the polar opposite of football like teen dramas on ABC Family. You know?
I can't. This seems so unfamily, though.
It's like Teen Nick, except for with like someone gets killed with a field hockey stick, they break into a hospital. That's how she died. She got hit in the back of the head with a field hockey stick.
Ah, you hate to see that.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you're talking about there's teen angst going on here, forbidden love. Caleb and Hannah, they're in love. They're from two different classes.
Ooh.
Caleb is a poor boy, a poor orphan. He's done some crime. Hannah is a very rich blonde girl. Her parents were divorced, but they might be getting back together. They spent the night together, but now our dad's supposed to be getting married to his fiance. I mean, there's some very intriguing storylines here that help me work through just my everyday blog life.
Okay, I have a two-part question now. and I don't think you can answer one without the other. One, are all the actresses 18? And two, are they all hot?
They are all hot and over 18. The only way I could say that is if they were over 18. I checked this out on IMDb.
Good man.
When I started watching the show, they are all over 18. They are right in that, like, 20-ish range normally. A couple of them are a little bit older. But, yeah, they are. The main characters are all over 18, so it is okay to check them out.
Okay, obviously. Okay, good. Because I didn't want to be, like, a creep.
No creep.
Well,
that is what, yeah, no creep at all. This is very, it's all above board ogling. It's all above
board. It's important, man.
Hey, you know, we've got Girls' Generation, so it's all about the same. So, anyway, Mike Felder, ladies and gentlemen, of PrettyLittleLiars.com. and bleachers.net. And all the other things he mentioned before. Mike, you want to give one more plug on Myriad?
yes, onsidekick.com. We've got some stuff coming out. Actually, I wrote why the 3-4 is a new vogue defense, why everyone thinks it's a cure-all. I've also got a how to watch football because I realize that I don't watch it the same way that most people do because I don't normally look at the football when I'm watching the game. And Crystal Ball Run, like I said, my favorite. It's got Steven Garcia. Also got something on Butch Davis coming up at crystalballrun.com. And obviously at inthebleachers.net, just doing my normal mediocre shuffle through college football. Whatever happens in the morning, I write about stuff. Today I had something about training camp being so hard, and I made sure to restrain myself from writing about the time when my first training camp ever, 18-year-old me, when I cried to my mom on them because I wanted to come home. Because I didn't want to be there anymore. And I did not put that in the article, but this is for Blackheart Gold Pants podcast listeners. Yes, I called my mom and asked her to come and get me at night so I could leave because I did not want to be there anymore.
Hey, real talk, I did the exact same thing. my first practice at Cornell 11 years ago. I wasn't crying, though. I don't mean to... Draw such a distinction to you.
It's okay. I'm a crier. I cry a lot. I cried the other day watching Shannon Sharpe's Hall of Fame speech. I cry. So
hey, there's no shame in crying in that. That was a hell of a speech.
I guess if we're all going to do mea culpas here, I did the same thing when I was trying to walk onto the Iowa golf team. Oh, all right.
Like, carry your own bag. So, I mean, I can understand.
Exactly. It was excruciating. It was awful. Couldn't take it anymore. Mom, come get me. By the way, the Junction Boys is based on the entire premise, guys, so you're in good company.
He ain't quitting.
You damn near killed my friend. By the way, we should have done that for Rabno.
Oh, God.
How did we not think of that?
All
right.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, and make sure, this is with training camp going on, all hilarity aside, I hope all the kids are okay and getting hydrated because, man, that... When that happened this past wintertime, that was tough, man. Tough to read because I got a good friend now that, I've got a good friend that actually has like the actual affliction, like the real disease. Like he goes through every day with that and he had to go through practice. They thought he was being lazy at practice because he couldn't go anymore. And then I had my roommate actually collapse and spent a couple days in the hospital with rhabdomyolysis. Like, it was tough for him too, so I'm just hoping trainers watch your warning signs, strength and condition them, push them hard, but know when to pull back, and players, take care of your bodies.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that. All right, Mike, thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you guys so much for having me on.